Hi, you're listening to Impact, Diálogos, a podcast on Brazilian contemporary politics, populism, and conspiracy theory. I am Caterina Hadzikidi, and I'm your host. In this episode, I speak with Rodrigo Pato Sá Mota. Rodrigo Pato Sá Mota is a historian and professor at the Federal University of Minas Gerais in Brazil. He has been a visiting professor in several universities, among them the University of Santiago, the National University of Colombia, and the New Sorbonne Paris III University. His work focuses mainly on political history, with a particular interest in the 1964 coup d'etat, the military regime, and issues of political repression and anti-communism. In this episode of Impact, Diálogos, Rodrigo will speak about his book on the history of anti-communism in Brazil, the conspiracy theory known as Cohen Plan, and militarism in Bolsonaro's administration. Rodrigo's 2002 book recently came out in English as On Guard Against the Red Menace, Anti-Communism in Brazil, 1917-1964. With a new afterword, the book remains surprisingly timely, nearly 20 years after its first publication. In recent years, communism has often been used as a catch-all term to describe a broad range of leftist, progressive, and even liberal politics in Brazil. The word communist is frequently used as a slur and applied to those who disagree with one's views. So my first question to Rodrigo was, how are we to understand the colloquial use of communism in contemporary Brazil?
There is a strategy of presenting all forms of left or progressive proposals as more radical than they really are. I mean, to mix all the different leftist trends under the communist label and to blur their differences is interesting for the conservative groups. So it is first a political strategy in order to model the leftist activism, because communism evokes terrible images of suffering, murder, starvation, and so on. Images carefully publicized by anti-communist propaganda. So it's interesting to label all kinds of leftist activism as communist, because by such strategy they are showing more dangerous and menacing stand. But there is another question. Why so many Brazilians accept and believe in such discourses? Why it is so easy to convince people in Brazil that any kind of political left is communist? Well, this is an important question, and I believe the answer is connected to the Brazilian history. The Communist Party in Brazil was illegal during most of its history, so the communist militants were clandestine, and for that it was difficult to know who were the true communists and who were the progressive militants. Another important question, I believe, is that from the 30s to the 80s, the Communist Party in Brazil had no adversaries in the socialist field. There was no socialist party relevant enough to compete or to rivalize with the communists. So most of the people in Brazil got used to the idea that someone leftist was probably a communist, because the image of the left activism in Brazil was communist. There was no socialist party as in Europe, for instance. So I believe that this helped to create this trend to blur anything left to communism. And also another point here to conclude this, the Communist Party was a relevant political actor in Brazil from the 30s to the 80s. Of course, they never had the chance to achieve power. They were a small party, but they were relevant in the political scenario. And so communism was not really a ghost. It was an actor, political actor. But the anti-communist leaders created a rather exaggerated and distorted image of Brazilian communism. First, by presenting communism as a demonic evil, and secondly, by presenting the Communist Party as much stronger and dangerous than it really was.
I asked Rodrigo about the ideological underpinnings of what he describes as the Brazilian anti-communist tradition and its political effects in recent history.
In the book that you already mentioned, I proposed that the Brazilian anti-communism discourses come from three basic matrices: Christianity, nationalism, and liberalism. This is not a rigid separation, of course, since in social practice, the right-wing discourses could combine and use elements from all three matrices. Nevertheless, it remains the fact that in terms of their origins, the arguments used in anti-communist propaganda derived mostly from these three different political and cultural matrices that we can understand and discern in our analysis. Basically, communism is rejected by Christianity because of its materialistic and anti-clerical stances. In the case of liberalism, of course, communism is rejected due to its proposal of social property instead of private property, and because communism refuses liberal political institutions. And in the case of this third matrix, that is nationalism, the nationalists hate communism because the communists have this internationalistic character. When I wrote the book, I was thinking mainly about Brazil. But after that, some researchers from other countries considered that this analysis concerning these three matrices could fit their own national history. So I believe that this could help to analyze and research anti-communism in other countries. We should consider also the political effects of this anti-communism movements and discourses in Brazil. The political effects were and are very important. And that was my main purpose in the book, to understand exactly the political effects of anti-communism. To do that, I analyzed its discourses, its matrices, its leaders, some of its political movements. But the main point of my book is that the two most important and durable dictatorships in Brazilian history were based and justified by anti-communism. That is, the authoritarian leaders connected to those dictatorships affirmed that their main goal was to protect Brazil and Brazilian people from communism. With some adaptations and modifications, this basic script was performed twice in Brazil, in the 30s, more precisely in 1937, and in 1964. This was our greatest coup d'etat, and they both opened the way to right-wing dictatorships that lasted 8 years in the first case and 20 years in the second case, the military dictatorship of the 60s and the 70s. So anti-communism in Brazil is profoundly linked to our authoritarian tradition and the political repression too, because in the name of combating the Reds, Brazilian state built repressive institutions such as police departments specialized in combating communism, and also a repressive legislation that established the political crimes, and they were all connected to leftist activism.
In his work, Rodrigo identifies three major anti-communist waves in Brazil's modern history. The first from 1935 to 1937, the second from 1946 to 1948, and the third from 1961 to 1964. I asked him about points of convergence and divergence among these waves and whether the years before and after 2018 could qualify as a fourth wave.
The point in common in linking these four moments, of course, is the establishment of a right-wing political front that organizes its fighting and its discourse around the image of the necessity to save Brazil from the Reds, to protect Brazil, and that provoked important political effects. In the 30s and the 60s, the anti-communist waves ended in dictatorships and large-scale political repression, torture, censorship, political murders, disappearance of murdered bodies. So they are similar in their authoritarian and dictatorial structure. But in the first case, in the 30s, the dictatorship was a personal dictatorship led by a politician named Getúlio Vargas, a very important name in Brazil. Well, after that, he was elected president in the 50s. And this dictatorship of the 30s, led by Vargas, was a political regime in a way inspired by fascism. Well, they were in the 30s. But the military dictatorship in the 60s was not a personal dictatorship. It was more a corporatist dictatorship, a military dictatorship. And they had this list of 5 different army generals that acted as Brazilian presidents during this 20 years that lasted the dictatorship, the military dictatorship of the 60s. So they were different in this aspect. And also the military dictatorship of the 60s had different political commitments. They tried a kind of political arrangement that combined authoritarianism, political repression, with some liberal institutions, like the Congress, parliamentary elections. So it was a rather peculiar combination of dictatorship with liberal institutions. So it's different from the Vargas dictatorship, because in the 60s, the fascist element was rather secondary. Although there were fascists supporting the military, in the 60s, they were not that relevant as they were in the 30s. And the liberals were allied to the militaries in the 60s. Concerning the other wave, the anti-communist wave of the 40s, just after the Second World War, the period that Brazil was again a liberal republic with elections and so on, in 1946, during this democratization process, the Communist Party was legalized and presented itself in the elections and received 5% of the votes to the chamber and 9% of the votes to the presidential candidate. At that time, the right-wing groups in Brazil started a new anti-communist campaign because they were worried about this political activism of the communists. Of course, the international situation, the Cold War, and also because at the time the Brazilian social movements were in action, many strikes for better wages, and well, so that arose a new moment of persecution of the left that led to the breakup of diplomatic relations with Soviet Union and led to ban the Brazilian Communist Party that again was illegalized and returned to its clandestine militancy. So in this second wave that I named the second wave, there was no dictatorship in the end, but anyway, there was authoritarian measures and political repression, not only against the communists, but against social leaders and progressive leaders. Today, what can we say about our present situation? I believe that today we are living through a kind of fourth anti-communist wave, very similar in some aspects to the 3 previous ones. Because the discourse is very similar, the discourse against the Reds, the Red Menace, the communist infiltration, the Reds and the leftists accused of trying to destroy religion, trying to change the social behaviors. And there are many, many morals. The question of the exotic origins of socialism, the theme of China as an enemy, the theme of Venezuela and Cuba as socialist enemies of Brazil. And this is really very similar to what we had in the 20th century. But of course, we are in the middle of this process, and that means that any assessment is provisional or temporary. But the most important for me, the greatest doubt is not if we can call this anti-communist wave, but what's going to happen in our near future. How this is going to end? Will we get to another kind of authoritarian regime like in the 30s and the 60s? Or maybe this time we will have a different history and the Brazilian Democrats will be able to defeat the right-wing authorities that are in action today? That's, for me, the most important question. And of course, I hope this time the end of the history will be different. Let's work for that.
I asked Rodrigo to tell me why, in his view, did the Red Menace become relevant again in 2018, and how did Bolsonaro adjust it to his political agenda?
First of all, anti-communism never disappeared from Brazilian politics. Since the 30s, it has been a permanent banner to the extreme right wing, and sometimes those groups are able to mobilize the moderate right under the same banner. As I said, that is happening again in Brazil in the recent years. Bolsonaro is sincerely anti-communist. It's part of him, his values. He was educated in such terms in the military school in the 70s, during the final period of the military dictatorship. So he's a true anti-leftist. He hates the Reds, the socialists, the progressives. It's not only opportunism. And many of his followers feel the same. When the dictatorship ended in the 80s, and when we had the beginning of this civil regime that was able to approve the constitution of 1988, the militaries left the power, and the left-wing groups and progressive groups occupied the public scene, the public scenario, and that arose disgust to the radical right, mainly the conservative Christians and the authoritarian militaries. For them, since the late 80s, the communists were back to power and they started to feel a nostalgia concerning the military regime. This negative stance got worse when the Workers' Party came to power in 2003 with Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva when he won the presidential elections. By then, the conservative and authoritarian right began to organize a response to what they considered a new red menace. So for them, the Workers' Party, in Portuguese, the Partido dos Trabalhadores, the PT, the PT, was a new kind of red menace. For some of them, the Workers' Party represent the last expression of communism, the last evil flower of communism. A rather influential right-wing public intellectual created the expression comunopetism, by which he says that the Workers' Party is in fact a communist party.
Rodrigo is referring to Olavo de Carvalho. To know more about the so-called guru of Bolsonarism, I suggest you listen to the episode with Letícia Duarte, where she explains all things Olavo.
You know, I came to know him precisely when my book about communism was published in 2002. By then, he wrote a periodical article in the newspaper Globo, and he attacked my book, saying that I was part of some kind of conspiracy to smear the anti-communists. I understood that his message was to his followers that they should not read my book because my book was not interesting or relevant to them because I showed the anti-communism tradition in a critical stance. By then, it was really unlikely to believe that such an intellectual would become so influential as he became. It was really impossible to believe that. One of my friends told me, well, you should be happy because he attacked your book. The problem would be if he said the opposite. If he said good things about your book, you should be worried. His criticism is better than the contrary. So in the early 20th century, the first decade of the 20th century, a group of right-wing public intellectuals like Olavo de Carvalho and others, they started a kind of cultural battle against the left and against progressive values. of course, aimed mainly to the government of the Workers' Party and Lula, and after Lula, Dilma Rousseff. By that time, Bolsonaro was a deputy in the Federal Chamber, known by his radical ideas, but with little public influence. The work of those right-wing forces grew, and they were favored by some trends. First, but not in a sequence of importance, the growth of the conservative Protestant churches had an important political effect. Bolsonaro is very close to these conservative Protestant churches. Although many conservative Catholics voted for Bolsonaro too, but there is no doubt that the main force in the conservative Christianity are the Protestants, the new churches, evangelicals. They reacted against progressive politics advanced by the Workers' Party in cultural and behavioral aspects, like demands and laws concerning equal rights and so forth, provoked the rejection of the conservative Christians against the Workers' Party in power. And they connected that with the communist tradition, the idea that the communists destroy religion and Christian morals and so forth. The other thing important, I already mentioned, the growth in transnational sphere of the right-wing groups everywhere. And another important aspect is the economic crisis by the end of Rousseff's government that eroded part of the Workers' Party support. When and during the time that the Workers' Party delivered an economy growing in Brazil, extreme right-wing forces were not that influential. But when the economic crisis arose, many people started to accept the criticisms against the Workers' Party. Just after the start of Rousseff's second government, the protests against her government and against the left exploded because of the revelations of car wash operation connecting the government to corruption. And the right-wing forces used this stance to grow and to amplify their capacity of influence. The crisis that followed, the impeachment of Rousseff in 2016, provoked an enormous crisis in Brazilian political system. And that offered Bolsonaro the opportunity to offer himself as the champion against the Reds and against corruption that they connected to the Reds. For them, corruption was something connected to leftism. They saw no corruption in the right. Many people that, including many people that voted for Lula years before, accepted those discourses and voted for Bolsonaro in 2018. So the election of Bolsonaro was very peculiar, but at the same time predictable when we consider the Brazilian history, that in many, many moments, an important part of the Brazilian population accepted that the red menace is something really important.
The myth of Judeo-Bolshevism, linking anti-Semitism with anti-communism, was particularly influential in the 20th century. Likewise, in the mid-1930s, a very important conspiracy theory in Brazil was the so-called Cohen Plan, a fictitious Judeo-Bolshevik plan to take power, which facilitated the 1937 coup d'etat. I asked Rodrigo to comment on the role of anti-Semitism in anti-communist and other conspiracy theories circulating in Brazil.
Yeah, this is very interesting. There were other conspiracy theories that connected to anti-communism too. Like, for instance, the Masonry conspiracy. Some anti-communist leaders said that the communists were connected to the Masons too, and they were part of the same menace. And the Jewish conspiracy is very important too. I believe it comes from that nationalist matrix, because the anti-communism of nationalist origin is really concerned about foreigners. They say that communism is an exotic plant that comes from abroad, comes from Russia, and that connected to the Jews, because many right-wing leaders throughout the world in the beginning of the 20th century defended the idea that the Jewish people were responsible for many evils, for conspiracies against the West, against the Christian society. And they constructed the idea that communism and Marxism were created by the Jews to destroy the Christian world and to establish their empire. So this discourse that Hitler, for instance, adapted and accepted was disseminated too in Brazil in the 20s and 30s, of course connected to the fascist groups, but also some conservative Catholic accepted the idea too, and they publicized this image of the Judeo-Bolshevist conspiracy in the 30s. So it circulated in Brazil. This image was reinforced or was justified by the presence of many recent immigrants in Brazil. Like other countries, Brazil received millions of immigrants since the end of the 19th century. A group of Jews came to Brazil too, but a little group in comparison to the ones that went to United States or to Argentina, for instance. But they were visible in some cities, particularly Rio and São Paulo, and they were used by the anti-Semitic leaders as a proof that they were saying the truth, that there were Jews coming to Brazil and bringing with them the communist ideas. So there was a lot of propaganda about that in the 30s. The Brazilian government at the time inclusively adopted migration policies that tried to avoid the immigration of Jewish people to Brazil. And that's why they used this name Cohen in the so-called Cohen plan, because the people that wrote the plan, in fact, it was written by a fascist army captain called Olímpio Mourão, and they presented this plan to the public opinion, saying that it was really a communist plan that the armed forces discovered. And the idea was to provoke fear in the Brazilian people and to say that Brazil needed a strong regime, needed a dictatorship to be protected against this menace, this exotic menace. And so the Cohen name in the plan is used for that, to try to convince people that there was a strong red menace and it was exotic, foreign, Jewish, dangerous. And that's why they used the name Cohen in the plan. Of course, some years later, it was discovered as a fake conspiracy, a fake plan. It was considered from then on as a ridiculous moment of Brazilian history.
It is worth mentioning that Olímpio Mourão Filho was the same person who in 1964 would play a key role in leading the military coup against the president João Goulart.
Anti-Semitism lost importance in the decades before, after that. Of course, it has to do with the international situation too. Anti-Semitism nowadays, it's not really an important question for the right-wing forces in Brazil. Probably some are still anti-Semitic, but most of them are not. It's interesting to say that Bolsonaro is very friendly towards the Jewish people and towards Israel. And he was able to attract support from part of the Brazilian Jewish community. That arose a strong conflict among the Jewish community, but an important group voted for Bolsonaro.
Bolsonaro likes to brandish his military credentials, often before his political credentials, as he did in 2018 when he presented himself as an anti-politics and anti-establishment candidate. However, a closer look at his trajectory in the armed forces shows a not-so-harmonious relationship between him and his military superiors. Indeed, his dissentious stance against the military maxim of order and discipline is rather striking, and his behavior in the armed forces might be more accurately described as a tendency towards insubordination. I ask Rodrigo whether, in his view, this tension has transformed or whether it is still reflected in Bolsonaro's relations with militaries. In other words, what does his wobbling trajectory in the armed forces tell us about Bolsonaro's political persona?
Well, you know, Bolsonaro was judged by a military court in the late 1980s. He was accused of planning a terrorist act to protest against the low wages in the army by the time, because the dictatorship produced hyperinflation that eroded the salaries, including the military salaries. So Bolsonaro was a rebel, and he disrespected the military discipline. The military judges absolved him from the charges, but a few weeks later, Bolsonaro quit the army to start his political career, taking advantage of the fact that this process made him very known, especially among right-wing groups. He was rather young, 34 or 35 years, and that made him famous. and he took the opportunity to become a politician. So he left the army, he started as a politician. As deputy, he had better relations with the low-rank militaries than with the high-rank militaries. But when this right-wing wave appeared close to Rousseff's election and impeachment, a group of generals approached Bolsonaro and helped him create a political candidacy for the presidency. Those generals, they wanted their former comrade to become president, of course, because it was someone with similar ideas, an enemy to the left-wing groups. But those generals, they probably did not trust Bolsonaro. And he probably has resentments too, because he was persecuted by the militaries. And Bolsonaro has always a problem that he needs to show that he is the real boss. This is a problem for him because his vice president is a general and he is just a captain. So they made this alliance, but there are tensions since the beginning, especially because some officers in service fear that Bolsonaro's failure can harm the image of the army. And for that, a few generals left Bolsonaro's government and they criticize him. Many of them understand that Bolsonaro is incompetent. So, to answer your final question, I think that Bolsonaro's career as officer and also as politician shows that he is a radical man, insubordinate, selfish, and also completely unprepared to govern a country. He showed himself smart enough to win the elections, but it takes more than that to be an efficient leader. It is a tragedy for us to be governed by such a figure. But from another point of view, his incompetence may save us from an extreme right-wing government that otherwise could last for many years. So we will see that, and also we will see what will come from this military alliance to Bolsonaro, because it's not that straight, and the militaries are opportunistic too. They will leave the boat if they understand that it has no future, and if they understand it presents a menace to the army image. So there is a lot to happen here in Brazil in the next months and years, and let's hope that in the end there will be no authoritarian regime, no illiberal regime. Let's hope and work for that.
My final question to Rodrigo was about historical revisionism. One of the most influential producers of filmic material that presents its own version of historical facts in a pedagogic way is Brasil Paralelo. The so-called documentaries they produce have since 2019 also been shown at the public broadcasting television network TV Escola, linked to the Ministry of Education. I ask Rodrigo, what does he think is at stake in the construction of narratives about the past by such so-called alternative media that represent examples of historical revisionism built around anti-communist fear and far-right political orientation?
I believe that this is part of the cultural war to conquer and hegemonize the public opinion. It's interesting that there is nowadays a sort of right-wing Gramscianism concerning the ideas of Italian Marxist Antonio Gramsci. The right-wing intellectuals accuse the left of planning to use Gramsci's ideas and infiltrate the cultural industry to dominate people's beliefs. But what we see is that the right-wing is doing exactly that. I mean, they are infiltrating the cultural industry, trying to do so, and particularly, they are using the so-called new social media, the internet resources, to disseminate their views and try to conquer the souls and the hearts and minds of the Brazilian people. This group that you mentioned, the Brasil Paralelo, they produce especially audiovisual material because they know that this is the best strategy to attract young people. Their vision about history is conservative in all aspects. Inclusively, they try to restore the traditional nationalistic history of Brazil. And that means, for instance, try to show that Brazilian slavery was soft, was not violent. And concerning the recent history, those groups present and represent the military regime as positive and necessary because they say they saved Brazil from communism. That is a vision that connects to our present. That is, communism was a menace then, and it still is a menace and a danger to be defeated today. So when they praise the military regime, they are using this image to justify a government led by a captain that is surrounded by generals. And this could also be used to justify another authoritarian regime. With Bolsonaro, of course, if Bolsonaro can be able to get free from the liberal institutions that still restrain him, like the Supreme Court and the Congress.
This was an episode of Impact Dialogues. In this episode, I spoke with Rodrigo Pato Sá Mota about anti-communism, militarism, and conspiracy theories in Brazil. Impact Dialogues is an original production that is part of the ERC-funded PACT, Populism and Conspiracy Theory Project at the University of Tübingen, Germany. It is written, produced, and hosted by me, Katerina Hadzikidi. Sound design and mixing by Ignacio Albornoz Farinha. Special thanks to Steffi da Silva, Yul Ko, and Michael Buter. Thank you for listening. See you next time.